Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Friday, February 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll find out about upcoming sound and motion presentations with Katie Bosler. The Canvas's Brandon Howard will be here to discuss upcoming classes. We'll get a preview of the Friday Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center about Suicide Basin's 2014 outburst flood. And Opera to Go's Todd Hunt will be here to highlight this weekend's presentations of Cunning Little Vixen, those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native organizers against a mine proposal in northern Wisconsin are looking to maple syrup as an economic alternative. As WXPR's Natalie Jablonski reports, the Lakota Ray Harvest Education and Learning Project is hoping to launch a commercial maple syrup operation near the proposed mine site.
The Harvest Camp, also called the Help Village, began almost 2 years ago in protest of an iron mine proposal in the Pinoki Range. Spokesperson Paul DeMain says syrup production is a more sustainable alternative to open-pit mining.
The tapping industry, just not maples, we're talking about potential yellow and white birch. There are other trees that are tappable as well, is that we'd like to try to look at revitalizing that industry.
DeMain says organizers are planning two separate syrup operations, one for non-commercial purposes and another that works toward food-grade certification.
So what we'll be doing is using food-grade containers. We'll be using food-grade transportation systems, galvanized steel and everything, so that if we do achieve that, we can sell to a wholesaler or resell it on the commercial market.
Volunteers are holding a tree-tapping ceremony this weekend in the Pinoki Range. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski.
The National Congress of American Indians held its winter session in Washington, D.C. this week. Tribal leaders discussed topics ranging from education to transportation. Matt Laszlo has the story.
Morning commuters slogged through fresh snow in the nation's capital this week, while tribal leaders and other attendees at the National Congress of American Indians were pouring piping hot coffee and grubbing down on breakfast pastries. Conference rooms were reserved for topics like small business administration, health care, education, and even tribal marijuana policy. Chet Brooks is chief of the Delaware Tribe of Indians in Oklahoma. He says his biggest issue when talking with federal officials remains health care.
We've got particular problems in Native American society, such as diabetes and alcoholism, certain things that we need all the health care assistance we can get.
When it comes to advancing the interests of Indian country in 21st century America, tribal leaders say they need to remain vigilant and unified. They report being unified while meeting with lawmakers on Capitol Hill this week. It's their best chance to ensure the federal government pays attention to their needs. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Roughly 100 people took part in a peaceful march Thursday against racism in Rapid City, South Dakota. Protesters expressed anger over what they see as unfair treatment of Native people in the justice system and unfair economic conditions. Marchers included 77-year-old Dennis Banks, a founding member of the American Indian Movement. Banks says he's come back to Rapid City too often over the years to join in protests like this.
This is probably about my 10th time I've had to come and march in Rapid City against racism. Of course, there's not everybody in Rapid City is racist. We know that. But there's no voice from the state officials, state legislators, senators that say nothing against racism. Then it gives license to those people to commit acts of violence.
A series of public meetings and events are planned in the coming weeks, all aimed at addressing racism. Seattle news agencies report Native American murals in the city vandalized with paint have been cleaned up. The murals at a school honor Native leaders like Chief Joseph and Chief Seattle. This week, a group of volunteers reportedly scrubbed the portraits as police investigate the incident. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4th, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians with this message for American Indians 50 and over. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Friday, February 27th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and now in the studio with me is UAS's Public Relations and Marketing Director, Ms. Katie Bosler. Katie, welcome to the show today.
Well, it's nice to be here, Scott, on this gorgeous day.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, I think it's, is it April?
Is it Folk Fest?
It feels, sure feels like it. The birds are singing, the crocuses are blooming.
Well, thanks for coming inside to share about the Sound and Motion series. Very cool series out there at UAS.
Yes.
Tell us about it. What do you got cooking?
Well, tonight, for those of you who missed it, and I took a gander that many of us did miss the Jump Fest this year because it was on Wearable Arts Weekend. There were lots of other things going on. And you've got one last chance tonight at the Egan Lecture Hall. Jump occasionally, that's Juneau Underground Motion Picture Society. With, of course, Pat Race, Aaron Searing, and Lou Logan and co. Make their way out to the university, and they show the films at our Egan Lecture Hall, which is, for those of you who haven't been out to the university, it's just a wonderful space, great sound, really nice place to see some films. And the way the seating is worked out, it's one of those kind of, you know, the sloping seating, amphitheater style, where there's nobody's head in your way.
Yeah, there's no bad seat.
Yeah, and also it's great leg room. Mm-hmm. You can, like, you know, be in the middle of the aisle and walk down to use the restroom or whatever, and you don't trip over people.
Very intimate.
Yes. I'm all about PR, you know, and this PR for even lecture hall. But I have the program right in front of me, and it looks like there's some really interesting films. There, of course, are always good films by Lucid Reverie that is associated with the Jump Society. They always have some great films. They have one called Stop Bath. In this first half, and Alaska Robotics, they're also associated with that. One called Weed. I wonder what that could be about.
I wonder.
Then also a gentleman named Jerry Spencer has a couple of films, Walkabout, The New World. We also have an Orca adaptive ski and snowboard film. Riley Woodford from Fish and Game has a Sounds Wild film.
Very cool.
About tadpoles.
What can't that guy do?
Yeah.
Musician, filmmaker,
singer-songwriter.
You name it.
Yeah, got it all, Riley. Looks like Greg and Bonnie Cheney have something called Skating on Mendenhall Lake. You know, remember that, skating? It was only a few weeks ago that we were skating.
What?
Yeah. So, and also you got Sonny Pittman has some, looks like a snowboard film, Local Heroes and the Brosifs, which for those of us who... you know, this year we're kind of living vicariously on the hill, and so that might be a nice film to come out and see.
And short films, too. I think they're all 10 minutes or less, right?
Right. It looks like actually most of the films I see here, the longest is 8 minutes. They're anywhere between 1.5 and 5 minutes for the most part.
And tonight is free, right? Like all Sound and Motion, right?
Yes, yes. And all the Jump Society, their biannual film festival is always free. And they've been doing this now for more than a decade.
Right. Very cool.
So it's a great opportunity for local filmmakers. So if you want to come out and see some local films, tonight at the Egan Lecture Hall, 7 o'clock. And then Sound and Motion continues next week. And this is going to be a really interesting speaker. This is a TED Fellow named Colleen Flanagan. She is an environmental artist, and she it's going along with our One Campus, One Book, which was the log book from the Sea of Cortez by John Steinbeck. So she is coming to Juneau and is going to do, before the evening at Egan, at the Egan Lecture Hall, a week from tonight, a workshop on regenerating coral. So that should be a really great opportunity for you would-be artists out there. And
do you know where that workshop's going to take
place?
That's
going to be like right outside the lecture hall. So it's going to be at 6:30. It's called a Reformed Sculpture Activity. This is in collaboration with UAS Art Department and PADAR, Dalthorpe. Mm-hmm. So this is going to kind of take a look at where art and environment merge, and participants are going to work with sculpture students from UAS to build two-dimensional clay corals.
Interesting.
Using handcrafted molds and stamps.
Getting interactive.
Yeah. And then later, these sculptures will be fired and painted by UAS students.
Wow.
And that will be used to create an installation piece that will be unveiled at the pottery sale in May out at UAS.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds very cool.
So moms and dads who have some budding sculptures, kids interested in working with clay, listening, that's going to be a week from tonight, 6:30, just outside the Egan Lecture Hall. Then at 7:15 will be Colleen's talk, and this is about dying coral reefs, you know, due to factors like pollution, fishing, trawling, and neglect, and how coral provides an essential habitat for biodiversity in the ocean. How do we save it? So, again, Colleen is a TED Fellow. She's an activist. She's going to explore species endangerment, regeneration, and art, and where that all, the cross-section of those things. The result is something she calls living sea sculptures. So that's a lot to Colleen.
Yeah.
But that'll be next Friday, the 6th, out at the lecture hall.
And, Katie, before we get on to the remaining Sound and Motion events.
Sure.
Can you tell us the difference between this and the Evening at Egan lecture series in the fall? How do they differ?
Sure, Scott. Well, Sound and Motion is our art series. So this is focusing more on the visual arts, music, spoken word. Like in April, for example, we have both the Wish Canady Poetry Slam will be making their way out to the university, as well as the annual Tidal Echoes launch. That's the literary and art journal produced by the University of Alaska Southeast. So that's, whereas Evening at Egan is more lecture, more academic based,
okay,
if you will, more, I
sure,
guess, includes sciences, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Both free, both on Fridays in the fall. One's in the fall, one's in the spring.
Right. And for the most part in the lecture hall, but also some events are in the library, which, speaking of the library, the other thing that's different about Sound and Motion is Evening at Egan, you can count on it being every Friday at 7 between mid-September and mid-November, whereas Sound and Motion is Friday nights at 7, but it's not every Friday night.
Got it.
So March is a perfect example. Whereas we just got done with February, where we had something every Friday. Well, for March, it's just this coming Friday, the 6th of March, and then the 27th, the last Friday. And this is going to be really interesting, Scott. This is in collaboration with the celebration of the 25th anniversary of the Egan Library. So there'll be a reception before the Sound and Motion in the library. And the talk will be by an author named Andy Hall, who is being brought in by our Alumni and Development Department. And the talk is called Denali's Howl, the Deadliest Climbing Disaster on America's Wildest Peak. Now, This is about a real tragedy in 1967, where a dozen young men attempted to climb Denali, and not everybody survived. And Andy Hall at that time was the son of the park superintendent. So what he ended up doing was doing some investigative journalism, and he wrote this book called Denali's Howl. So he'll be presenting on that, and that'll be the 27th of March at 7 o'clock at the library.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then finally, the last month of Sound and Motion is April. There are the first three Fridays in April we have events. The 3rd, mark your calendars. This is something we're really excited about. You know, we have an Alaska Airlines music series now at the university. Alaska Airlines is sponsoring UAS's efforts to bring in artists from out-of-town, musical artists. And this one will be at the Rec Center. And this is a music and comedy duo called Daka Boom. They're described as postmodern vaudeville. and they're best friends. These guys do a cappella, stand-up sketch, crowd interaction, several musical genres. They sound like a blast. So that'll be 7 o'clock, the 3rd of April, in the Rec Center. And then I did allude to the spoken word events in April, and just a little more detail on that. The 17th of April will be the Wish Canadian Poetry Slam, just like there's one tonight. It's a monthly event. Well, the one in April will be at the Egan Lecture Hall. The theme is old growth. So people who want to compete in the slam, you bring 3 poems. Or if you want to do the open mic, you sign up at 6:30, and the slam starts at 7. And then we will have a VJ doing improvisational video projections, which is a new thing. So you'll hear more about that coming up here, but I just want to give everybody a heads up. And then finally, the 24th, of course, is the Tidal Echoes launch. We're in the process of putting that together right now. That's our literary and art journal. This is going on for many years now. And the this year's featured author is Ishmael Hope, and artist is Fumi Matsumoto. And so that should be a great event. The launch
great
where
lineup.
You have people reading their work. Of course, Ishmael will read some of his work, fantastic poet. And that's also, I'm kind of timing this to tell you about all this because this year we divided our Evening Egan poster in half. So the first poster is being taken down now because it was January and February. We have the last February tonight, of course. That is Jump Society, biannual festival out at the Egan Lecture Hall at 7 tonight. And then the next poster will be going up around town as we speak for the March and April events.
And it's pretty easy to Google Sound in Motion.
Yes.
And find all these dates and descriptions.
Yeah, yeah. You know, something I always like to remind people of, to tell you a little bit about our website while I have the microphone. If you go to uas.alaska.edu and you click on Juno, you should see like a rotating different kind of, you know, meme of things that are going on. You'll see Sound in Motion. You can click on it. Or we have our own little search box within the UAS website. It's just a little oval box up on the right, and you just click put in Sound in Motion, you'll find it. Or you can just go to uas.alaska.edu/sound_motion, and there it is.
Very cool. Looks like a great season, interactive, interesting, diverse, some cool stuff going on out there at UAS, Katie Bosler. But tonight's show is at 7.
Mm-hmm.
In the Egan Lecture Hall, and the Jump folks and their collection of movies will be out there.
That's right.
Sounds like fun. Keep up the great work. Anything else we need to add, Katie?
Oh, no, just UAS is awesome.
Totally.
And I'm not saying that just because it's my job. It's a beautiful campus. It's a beautiful place to be. We have our pedestrian campus. It's kind of seeing its first spring, if you will. So come on out and just take a walk around, go to the library. And did you know, fun fact, more than 50% of our credit hours are online classes. So if you don't have time to take a class in person, but you've been wanting to kind of finish up that degree, you can always register for a class and take it online.
All right. And here is a tune inspired by the Jump Society's film presentation tonight.
Thanks, Scott.
They're gonna put me in the movies. They're gonna make the big star out of me. We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally. Well, I'll bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can't never tell. The movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you come to see me in the movie. Then I know that you will plainly see the biggest fool that's ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally. Thank you.
rehearsing. All I have to do is act naturally. Well, I'll bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can't never tell. A movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you come see me in the movie, and then I know that you will plainly see the biggest fools ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Bardathon is coming back to Juneau March 3rd through 8th. Celebrate the wit and wisdom of Shakespeare and take part in free community readings at the Juneau Public Library. Check out special performances with Theater in the Rough, Perseverance Theater, Theater at Latitude 58, and the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. Brought to you by JPL, Friends of the Library, and Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater. Visit juneau.org/library or find us on Facebook.
It's about 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on 104.3 and also on KRNN. And now in the studio with me is Brandon Hauer, the Canvas's Artistic Coordinator. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
It is great to have you on the show, as always. So what's cooking down at the Canvas these days?
Oh, boy. We've got all kinds of things going. Pretty excited. Spring break is right around the corner. And I know that a lot of parents are looking for good quality activities for the kids. And we offer kids wheel throwing classes throughout the year. But we offer two different sessions during spring break, a 9 o'clock in the morning to noon session, and then a 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. session. And I'm now the artistic coordinator, so I don't get to teach those classes. But we have our new ceramic studio manager, Mercedes Munoz, in there teaching those classes.
And what are the age ranges for those kids?
9 years old to, oh, I guess, you know, 9 and up.
Okay.
9 to 18. And, we have two different sessions, and there's still a couple openings in the morning and a couple openings in the afternoon. But we also have a visiting artist. We are very lucky to get a Juno Youth Activities Grant that helps us bring in a visiting artist to offer a class. And we're bringing in the same instructor that we had last year for spring break. Her name is Linda Lyons. She's here from Anchorage, really talented artist. And she's going to be doing also two sessions during spring break, a morning session from 9 a.m. until noon that's focused on a younger group, ages 7 to 11, and then a second session in the afternoon from 1 to 4 p.m., and that's for ages 9 and up. And it's going to be the same class. It sounds really interesting. It's going to be multimedia using painting, drawing, collage, and focusing on texture and pattern that you find in nature. Linda will also be offering a workshop while she's here for everybody else, starting on March 11th and going to the 15th. So it's going to start Wednesday evening at 6, and it goes from 6 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, March 11th through the 13th. And then from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on March 14th and March 15th. So it's a longer workshop. There's still space available for that, and that's $290. It's a workshop that's focusing on portraiture, and so they'll be working from a live model, drawing and translating those drawings into full-color oil paintings.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I love this tradition in Juneau, and I suspect maybe it happens in other communities, but of these great artistic opportunities during spring break.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about other communities.
You know, like Perseverance,
right.
You guys, Discovery Southeast, different. I'm sure there's a lot more I'm missing, but all great ways for young people to spend that free time during spring break.
There really are a lot of great programs across the board. And it's exciting to, you know, be a part of the canvas and being able to offer those programs. Bringing in a guest artist is a lot of value. You know, we just saw with MK McNaughton, she brought in the people doing the giant puppets, and
right.
that was such an awesome thing to see. And it's great because, you know, Juneau, we are isolated. There's no road out of here. And sometimes it's a little bit of sometimes we have a hard time with it, but a lot of times it's great because it draws so many people in, and it's an exciting place to visit. And so I think it kind of helps entice the visiting artists.
Absolutely. So some great programs going on there at the Canvas. How's the new gig as artistic coordinator treating you, Brandon?
Oh, man, I love it. It's a little bit of a wild ride. There's a lot going on. I'm pretty impressed. Christopher Taylor, who was the previous artistic coordinator, he moved to Brooklyn recently, and he's painting. That's going to be his gig. He's taken time to focus on his art, and I'm really understanding why he's taking off to give himself time to paint, because it's a busy job. It entails a lot, developing programming and managing so many different teachers. I'm really excited because down the line we have people like Ricky Tagaban who are going to be teaching classes at the Canvas.
Wow.
Weaving. He's going to be doing a Raven's Tale weaving class, and he's also going to be doing a class on thigh spinning yarn.
Interesting.
And I'm going to apologize ahead of time because I don't know much about weaving, but he's going to be working from raw material, raw wool, and teaching people how to create their own wool, how to spin their own wool. With a really simple, not a lot of tools involved, but learning that technique. And David Woody is going to be coming in and teaching a basic oil painting class later in March. Great resource, been creating art in Alaska for a long time, teaching out at the university for a long time. And so with the new position, getting to work with these artists, getting to work with Linda, who's going to be coming into town for spring break. It's a real treat.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. So remind us again the nuts and bolts of the spring break sessions.
So from 9 a.m. until 12 p.m. With Linda Lyons, it's a children's class over spring break, and that's for ages 7 to 11. And then from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., that's for older kids 9 and up. She's also going to be offering her portrait workshop, and that starts on March 11th and runs through the 15th. So it's Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and then Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Great creative way for young people to spend their free time.
Right.
On spring break.
Yeah.
Remind us again your website.
Our website is canvasarts.org. And do you mind if I mention one thing?
Please do. We're fine.
So another great thing that we have at the Canvas for this whole entire year is two visiting artists from Las Vegas, Tim Ortiz and Adriana Donahue. They're actually on the show on Wednesday. And tonight they're going to be giving a presentation at the Canvas. It's open to the public from 5:30 to 6:30. So if you have time, and I guess the sun might still be out, maybe on its way down at that point. Yeah, you'll want to be going inside. Stop in. It'll wrap up around 6:30.
What are they going to focus on?
They're going to be giving a presentation on their own work and their own processes. It's a great way to introduce them to the community and introduce the community to them.
And remind us what mediums they work in?
So Adriana does multimedia and installation work, sculptural. She does a lot of work with common materials like cardboard and paper, but makes these objects that you look at and you don't think, oh, that's cardboard or that's paper. And Tim's background is in painting, but he's also doing a lot of drawing. And I'm real excited to to hear their presentation. They're incredible on the radio, on the show on Wednesday. Yeah, swing by. Finishes up at 6:30. Gives you time to make your way out to Egan for the Jump Film Festival at 7. Perfect.
Excellent. Well, Brandon Howard, thanks for coming on the show today. We missing anything?
No, sir. I think that's all of it.
All right. We'll see you again soon, I hope.
Yes. Thank you so much, Scott.
Bobby Mitchell coming to you from the P-Flag Juno Pride Chorus. Our concert this year is Saturday, February 28th at 7 o'clock. We have moved to the Northern Light Church on West 11th. Tickets at the door. We will be honoring strong women like Malala, Joan of Arc, Sojourner Truth, and Mother Teresa. We sing of equality and respect. So come and support your PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus on February 28th, 7 o'clock at the Northern Light Church. See you there!
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, February 27th, 2015. It's about 35 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by Jamie Pierce. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you.
And also Dr. Hood from UAS. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you.
Nice to have you guys in. You're going to be out at tonight's Fireside Lecture Series at the Menino Glacier Visitor Center. Very exciting. And you're going to be talking about Suicide Basin's 2014 outburst flood.
Yeah, that's right. It should. So there's three of us actually involved. Jason Amundsen, who's not here, is also going to be out there for the talk. And basically we're going to look at a lot of the data we've collected, talk about the monitoring systems, show some pictures, give people a sense of what we've learned. We've now had really three outburst floods in the past 4 years, and so we can kind of compare and contrast those and start to think about what the future might hold in terms of the outburst flood.
And not to take anything away from tonight, but can you give us a quick outburst flood 101? What is it?
Well, basically, an outburst flood is, in this case, the glacier is acting as a dam, and so water is filling up in Suicide Basin. The main Mendenhall is the dam. And then when you get enough water pressure in the basin, it can actually drain out underneath the glacier and then into the lake, and so that's when we actually see the flood. So Jamie's been working on putting equipment in that can monitor the water levels in the lake.
Jamie, tell us a little bit about the equipment.
Yeah, so it's basically it's a pressure transducer that we drop in the lake on the margin of the Suicide Basin, which is stagnant ice. And on the side, we found a good area to set this. It's a pressure transducer that measures the water height as it rises, and there's free water that it starts to pool up, and this just gives us the ability to measure it, and then we send that out via telemetry and satellite. Using satellite modems, and then we're able to graph that and present that to the USGS that plots it for us.
So this is real-time data coming to you?
There's about an hour lag, but okay. Yeah. So that was, it took a little while to sort all that out, but we are now happy with it. So
thinking about the event in 2014, for example, when did you sort of say, something's going on here.
Yeah, I think it's, Aaron can probably address that, but we monitor the hydrograph records pretty closely in the river and the discharge, and you can start to see when things are happening pretty quickly, it shows up in the, downstream in the river gauges, but Aaron would probably be better to speak to that.
Yeah, in this case, we really saw just the height of water in the basin was at a higher level than we'd seen before, and so it's very hard to predict the actual magnitude of the flood, but what we did say, look in, is it's going to be bigger than anything we've seen in the past, and that did turn out to be the case. We hit about 20,000 CFS, which is the largest stream flow ever measured in the Mendenhall River in 50 years of, collecting data.
And luckily, in our case, the Mendenhall River flows pretty fast and can handle a lot of water, right? But can't these events be violent in some cases?
Yeah, there's certainly places in Alaska where damage has been done. Probably the closest example here would be up in Skagway. They had some glacier outburst floods, and it destroyed some roads and campgrounds outside of Skagway. The Mendenhall, the river itself is pretty deeply incised, so the banks are pretty high, and so it takes a lot for it to flood over banks. Obviously, it did flow out of banks in some areas, like people that live on View Drive next to the lake. There was some, moderate flooding there. There wasn't really much damage overall, more just some water in the streets and things like that. But it certainly, if it got bigger, we're kind of on the edge where it could start to inundate a larger area for sure.
Okay. So you'll be talking about this tonight at 6:30 and 8, is that right?
Yes.
All right. Sounds like fun. And what are some of the kind of things you guys will be showing and talking about beyond what we've talked about here today?
Good question.
Lots of good pictures. Good videos, graphs. I think it'll be nice to just, it's so close to You know, it's in an area that's kind of hidden from plain view unless you fly over it in a helicopter. So we'll have a lot of good videos and pictures and things to kind of take people into the area to see what's there. So
and such an apropos place to give this presentation too.
Yeah, no, it's really like Jamie said. I mean, it's if you go up into that basin, it's very close to the valley, but most people haven't been up there. So we'll try to give them a real feel for what it's like up there and kind of what the dynamics are.
Well, sounds like fun. 6:30 and 8 o'clock at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. These are free, right?
Yes, they are free.
And they're both the same presentation, just given at two different times.
Yes.
Because they're so popular.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully.
It's a lot of stuff going on tonight, but this sounds like a good one. Anything else that you guys would like to add?
I think that's about it.
Cool. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 27th of February, 2015. It's the birthday of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Portland, Maine, 1807. Went off to Bowdoin College with Nathaniel Hawthorne. After the death of his wife, Mary Potter, from complications of a miscarriage, Longfellow found solace in reading German poetry and began writing poetry of his own. His first collection, Ballads and Other Poems, came out in 1841. It included The Wreck of the Hesperus and The Village Blacksmith, was very popular. 6 years later, Evangeline, then The Song of Hiawatha, then The Courtship of Miles Standish. And after the tragic death of his second wife, Fanny, in a fire, he translated Dante's Inferno. It was on this date, 1860, Abraham Lincoln gave a speech against slavery at Cooper Union in New York City. The Great Hall filled 1,500 New Yorkers curious to see this man from Illinois. One eyewitness said, when he rose to speak, I was greatly disappointed. He was tall and so angular and awkward that I had for an instant a feeling of pity for so ungainly a man. But once Lincoln started to speak, quote, his face lighted up, the whole man was transfigured, I forgot his clothes, his personal appearance, his individual peculiarities, forgetting myself, I was on my feet, like the rest, yelling like a wild Indian, cheering this wonderful man. The speech was reprinted widely. The New York Times printed it in its entirety on the front page the next day. It made Lincoln famous. He was invited to speak all over the country, and that summer the Republican Party named him their candidate for the 1860 presidential election, a speech that ended with the words, let us have faith that right makes might, and in that faith let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it. And it's the birthday of John Steinbeck, Salinas, California, 1902. Supported himself as a manual laborer, wrote about migrant workers. His first success was the novel Tortilla Flat in 1935, became a movie starring Spencer Tracy and Hedy Lamarr. Drove around California in an old bakery truck, looking at migrant workers, writing about them for a newspaper. And in less than 6 months, out of his own journal, he had a 200,000-word manuscript, Grapes of Wrath. John Steinbeck, who said, we are lonesome animals. We spend all our life trying to be less lonesome. Here's a poem for today by Eamon Grennan, Window Grave. The dead bee lies on the window ledge, a relic, its amber-yellow body barred in black, and its head tucked in, dust gathering on every follicle and on the geodesic dome of the head, all tucked in and tucked away, so neat is death. And the many flies, too, all sizes, lying on their sides, as if asleep, just a quick nap, and they'll be up and off about their business. Souls, we used to say, bees, butterflies, moths, wasps, all sorts of flies, the air crowded and loud with leftover angels, but not the spider in its complex web, fallen from grace, but walking on air, vigilant in ways that harden the heart, getting its appetite back. Window Grave by Eamon Grennan from Still Life with Waterfall, published by Grey Wolf Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering coffee break service for the office, delivering fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses around Southeast. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, February 27th, 2015. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. And now in the studio with me is Todd Hunt. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
I am doing well.
Great.
And how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, all things considered.
You're in the thick of it.
Yeah, very much in the thick of it, and with a really nasty bug going around that's been messing with some of our singers. But it sounds like everybody is on the mend now, and we're definitely opening tomorrow.
Yes, Opera to Go's Cunning Little Vixen at Thunder Mountain High School, opening Saturday tomorrow.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, no, quite exciting. And I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And Janáček is one of those composers that I've had sort of a distant affair with, you know, wanting to do some, but a lot of it is so difficult or unmanageable. And this piece really struck me because it's so environmental, which we're kind of into here. You know, it's all takes place out in the woods, essentially. And also because it's got a large cast of singers. So there are lots of roles to pass around, which is another thing I try to look for when deciding to do a show.
You said you've had a love affair with Janáček for a long time. When did that begin and how?
In grad school, I was forced to listen to one of his operas in a survey of 20th century music lit that I was in, and not forced, really. I was like, oh, sure. You know, I've heard of him, but didn't know much of his music at all, and his music really struck me. Partly, I think, because of the way he uses motifs, like Beethoven. Beethoven will take a tiny little motive and spin it out into this huge, really complicated but interesting construction. And he kind of does the same thing, but in a different way. His motives, which another thing interesting about him, he takes all of his music, especially the vocal music, comes directly from the Czech language. So it's like he would essentially take dictation on how he thinks a line would be spoken, and he would put that in music and then write everything around that. And this is one of the reasons we're doing this in Czech and not in English, which is one of the really difficult things about this, because nobody in the cast has ever done anything in Czech, and myself included. I took Czech in grad school for one semester, and it completely blew my mind. But I'm back now after, God, almost 15 or 20 years, and I'm finally getting around to doing this.
And I heard you even brought in a Czech speech coach.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah, so Jamila Hlašwe is from Fairbanks right now, but she's born and raised in Prague. Came over here maybe 20 years ago, I'm thinking. I'm totally guessing on that now that I think about it. But no, she's made a couple of trips to Juno and worked with our singers at the beginning of the rehearsal process and is here now, still working with us. And that's been a huge help. I mean, it would have not been good to do that without her. And that was one of the things that fell into place for this piece to be possible, was to get somebody to work on the language. Because, like I said before, you really just, you can't do Janáček without doing it in Czech.
Got it. Yeah. You mentioned it's complicated, and Janáček can do complicated pieces from time to time. Mm-hmm. I've seen this piece described as a tragedy and a comedy.
Yeah.
What's your interpretation?
Now, that's, you know, people, one of the first things people say is, oh, Cunning Little Vixen, what's the story, or what's that about? And I go, whoa. That's really hard to say, because it's not plot-driven. Like, you know, a lot of plays or operas that we think of, it's more the life of this female fox, essentially, well, not from birth, but from very young cubdom, I'm not sure what you might call that, through her death, and how her and her her animal friends relate to and are contrasted with the human people that are in the story as well. And so it's a little bit more of a philosophical, overarching idea, but each of the 10 scenes has a pretty clear kind of goal and dramatic arc to it in and of itself. Did I say 10? I meant 9.
And spoiler alert, she does indeed die.
yeah, sorry about that. But, you know, going to the opera isn't about just being shocked in what you see, but rather knowing what's coming and knowing it's inevitable and feeling that. So everybody, you know, who is into opera knows the story of La Boheme, for instance, and you know she dies at the end, and it's really sad, but it tears you up every single time, no matter what. And this is kind of like that as well.
Well, it sounds like a really interesting piece. What mm-hmm. if, sounds like one of the challenges you had is this bug that's been going around through the singing community, it sounds
mm-hmm.
like.
Yeah, and my voice might seem just a touch lower than it normally does.
I was going to say, yeah.
I'm not really sick, and I'll never admit to being sick, but, there's a little something there. So that's been a big challenge. We actually lost one of our singers to a bug, and he decided he had to back out, and we had to replace him, just like 6 days ago or something. Wow. Yeah.
And flip side of that, what's been the most fulfilling part of this for you so far?
Oh, gosh, just musically. It's such wonderful music that it's beautiful without being sappy or sentimental. It's got beautiful melodies, but they're very short, and they're, like I mentioned before, these motives. Sometimes the melodies, you know, which we think of as something kind of long, are really just like a few beats long, and it's just the way he uses them I just find really fascinating. I've compositionally, it speaks to me. Yeah, very clearly.
Yeah, and a great piece by Amy Fletcher in the Juno
mm-hmm.
Empire this morning, and she mentioned that you have been working on this for about a year.
Oh, yeah. So the original orchestration for this is for a huge orchestra that, you know, we could barely fit on a full stage, much less in a pit, which are much, much smaller. So I started a reduction about a year ago for 8 people, thinking, okay, if this will work, then this is one of the pieces that has to fall into place for it to work. And so it's scored now for flute, oboe, clarinet, a French horn, piano, violin, a violin viola doubler, and cello.
Okay.
Yeah, it's taken from, like, you know, a 60 piece orchestra, including percussion and everything. Yeah. So that's been a big factor in the difficulty of this for me, is just I've been completely immersed in it.
And it opens tomorrow mm-hmm. at what time? At Thunder Mountain High School?
Yeah, it's Thunder Mountain High School at 7:30 tomorrow, Saturday. Yeah. And
very
we have
exciting.
A further performance this weekend on Sunday at 3, and then the next Friday, Saturday, both at 7:30.
Excellent. And I found you on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
Yeah, we've got
a website.
Yeah, we've got the website, www.operatogo.net. There's links right there on the front page for it. And there's also a Facebook event. And, you know, Opera to Go has its own Facebook thing, so you can join and kind of get updates as we have time to update it.
So how do you feel right now, the night before?
Oh, okay. So what I'm going to say in public is I feel great. I think it's going to be fantastic, although I'm a little bit scared just because it's such a difficult piece. But I fully have faith that it's going to going to work out really well. We had our first complete run through full tech everything last night, and we got through it without stopping, and we still have another rehearsal tonight, so I think we're in good shape.
Yeah, usually an edge gives art something a little bit more,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll have the edge. Oh, yeah, when you see this, it'll be nothing but edge.
Excellent. It sounds great, Todd.
Yeah.
So congratulations on this year, and looking forward to the presentations, the shows this weekend and next.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
Let's see. Oh, ticket prices. Ticket prices have been the same for years and years, ever since I took over. It's $20 for general admission, $15 for seniors, and only $5 for students. That includes all the way through UAS to, you know, the young'uns as well. And a $2 discount if you get it in advance at the Jack or at the bookstores or on our website.
Sounds good, Todd. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Great luck with the show.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. The common raven is our largest songbird, and it has a voice to match its size. We've visited ravens in the company of wolves, and in myth, taking control of the tides, changing the course of a river, even placing the sun in the sky. Ravens are seen as tricksters in many traditions. But ravens have their softer side, too. Common ravens probably mate for life. And in the same way that a human couple sometimes has to work to maintain their attachment, a pair of ravens exhibits behaviors that strengthen their relationship, or pair bond. Throughout the year, a pair of ravens may soar wingtip to wingtip, swooping in unison, tumbling through the sky. During courtship, the pair will often sit side by side, gently preening each other's feathers. And during that ritual, they may make these warbling sounds. Raven nestlings sometimes make this same sound after they've been fed. Compared to the usual raucous raven calls, this one is soothing to adults and to their young. It's called a comfort sound. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon on Monday. I'll be your host again, and we'll talk with author Rachel Weaver about her Monday night writing class. We'll get the details about an upcoming bereavement group meeting. Dmitry Karamazov will be here to talk about the new old-time Chautauqua coming to July into town. Regina Falacci of the Daughters of the American Revolution will be here to highlight their upcoming awards ceremony. And we'll talk with Ernestine Hayes, one of Aware's four women of distinction. Here's All Things Considered.